Hi, I just wanted to say hello and welcome to the first podcast of A Taste of Dawn. This is Dawn Garcia, and I'm the founding editor of ATOD Magazine. And I am just trying this out for the very first time. It has been an interesting process getting everything going. And those of you who read the magazine know that it's about just everything related to lifestyle. But the focus of food and wine, obviously, and photography and art. And I'm also going to dabble in the philanthropy outlets because I just think there's so much going on in this world that needs to be talked about. So the first episode, I guess, is more of an intro, and it's going to be rough, and I have no idea how it's going to come out. But I thought, you know what? Let's just wing it. So initially, I just wanted to talk about some of the things that are going on. And with the holidays approaching, which I genuinely cannot believe that the holidays are actually already here. I think that's insane. It seems like every year it just goes faster and faster and faster. And I never entirely know exactly how 12 months managed to sweep by. Like, it's just insane. So, anyways, it is already December 6th, and the days have just all seemed to blur together. And I'm working on a screenplay for those of you who don't know. So I'm a writer and a screenwriter. And the movie is an adaptation of a classic piece of literature. So when it's ready, I will give you all the details. But let's just say right now, it is coming along. It's taken me 2 years. It took me a year to write, a year to sit on it, and a few months to now edit it. So the story of a good piece of literature, and I do not want to rush it or make it in any way as bad as some of the other adaptations have been. It has been made into a movie several times, but I'm hoping that I will give it the justice it deserves. So, anyways, aside from that, what else? This has been an interesting week. I did have quite a fun weekend. It was kind of a global experience thanks to Alan Samsar at Barcelona Enterprises. I was invited to attend two dinners. One was a Mediterranean dinner at Kabuti, which is off of, what is it off of? Gosh, I can't remember right now, but it's in Westwood. And then the other one was on Saturday, which was at Got Kosher, which was another fun little restaurant in Los Angeles. And obviously, Los Angeles is plentiful in global fare. So the first night we had, it was a wine pairing that Alan had set up, and it was very interesting. But it was great wine and great conversation. But I always find it most interesting that at any of these restaurants, the one thing I think I've learned, I guess that's the most valuable lesson in doing everything that I've been doing in terms of going out to eat and writing about it, is that there is such an experience to be had, whether it is learning about a part of a culture that you didn't know about, which is a lot that really occurs mostly in global fare or fusion. And I think just opening yourself up to different spices and textures and flavors all blended together to create a sort of transcendent experience. It's supposed to take you somewhere else. It's supposed to make you feel as if you're engaging in a culture that you may otherwise not have an opportunity to engage in. Which to me is what sort of makes food the most unifying form of art that there is. And I say art just because if you look at some of the presentations that these chefs take the time to create, it's really something extraordinary. And even if it's just a traditional family-plated piece of, I don't know, whether it could be a bowl of couscous, it could be something as exquisite as a gastronomy-related dish that just blends. Some of these, can be meringue chips made out of blueberry, like Chef Rodolfo did a few weeks ago at the Foods from Chile event at Playa Riviera with Chef's Settler. And it also could be something as beautiful as, something I've seen Antonio Bucor do in Miami, which he just takes fruit and pulls little leaves and uses edible flowers and everything in the desserts that he creates. It also could be, in a, I don't know, there's a great Ethiopian restaurant off of Fairfax and Third in Los Angeles. But basically the idea is that no matter what it is, if you just try and engage yourself in it, it's just a really cool experience. So I think maybe I should focus on that. This one is just more about food and why I'm even doing this at all. sometimes you just want to teach people to experience and explore different kinds of things. And if you take a look at some of my posts on A Todd Magazine, and if you haven't gone, it's atoddmagazine.com. If you go under the food and drink section, even if you just went under something as simple as Los Angeles, I mean, Los Angeles has so many different kinds of food that, although that's not really under food and drink, is it? But basically, if you, you know, there's the Foods from Chile event, which happened at the Playa Riviera. There's a huge influx of Latin American cuisine that's happening really everywhere right now. And I guess that sort of leads me to a lot of things, which I'm going to touch on one of my favorite new chefs, which is Andres Dangond, who's Colombian and French. Is his background, but he is creating this amazing, amazing movement in Colombian cuisine. But before I get into that, I just want to talk about Los Angeles cuisine, because if you go anywhere in Los Angeles, it's pretty representative of the world, and that is the case in most metro cities. I mean, Chicago trumps pretty much every metro city in food, because it's just one of the most beautiful culinary landscapes in the United States and probably in the Western Hemisphere. So, it embodies every culture, every tradition. You know, something as simple as, of course, my favorite, which is the Chicago dog, to something as beautiful as some of these high-end restaurants, like the ones El Tuo, which now the chef is no longer there. But there's such a lovely movement in food. And honestly, I think it's becoming the most unifying thing that there really is. And I'm based in Los Angeles, obviously, so my exposure to food in Los Angeles is going to be at the forefront of everything I talk about. But I have traveled all over, and I do think that with the economy just breaking itself down and just becoming less and less reliable, the one commonality throughout war, throughout all of the craziness that's happening right now, and sort of the emotional instability of just about everybody, it's food. Like, you can sit at a table, you can bring people together that would never probably even take the time to sit in a room amongst each other. They come from different backgrounds, different religious beliefs, different political affiliations, and obviously different cultures. And in different, I should say, probably the more prominent is different professions. But if you get them at a table and you sit them around food, somehow through the process of eating, people become a little less inhibited and a lot more open to just being and asking simple questions. And it could be as simple as everybody enjoying the same bite and everybody having an experience that they outwardly share, whether it's a verbal yum or, you know, wow, this is something I've never had before. What is this? You know, it really opens up conversation, and it can sort of bring this peaceful transition to people and allow for all of us to sit and enjoy something that maybe we may not otherwise have enjoyed. So I think, to me, food is the most universal experience that we should all take advantage of. And I get that the economy is bad and going out isn't always feasible, but it doesn't have to be expensive for you to have a good time. Anyways, lots to say, and clearly this is completely off the cuff, and I'm going to try my best. I know that I can make these podcasts really refined, and maybe in time I will, but right now I think going off the cuff is just how I'm going to start. So all over the map, the essence is this particular episode, I just wanted to focus on food. And the whole reason I even started writing about it is because I do think that there's a lot of reviewers out there, there's a lot of food critics, and there are a lot of amazing food journalists that go out there and, you know, kind of touch on more of critiquing the actual food itself. And personally, I think that's a difficult task, because where you're at emotionally when you eat a meal determines how you portray that meal. Granted, there is just downright bad food, and that is, in my opinion, unforgivable. But there's also some really extraordinary food that you may take more pleasure in if you're feeling a little sexy that night, or you know, if you're having a good day at work, or whatever the elements are that are outside of that meal, they kind of infiltrate themselves subconsciously into how you perceive that meal. So I try really hard, you know, even if I have a bad meal, I think that there should be some healthy criticism as to why that meal was bad and what they could do to make it better. Like I said, some things are just unforgivable because I do think that these days people take for granted that a lot of hardworking people save their money to go out for a good meal. And when it's not a good meal or the service is terrible or, you know, the servers make you feel like you're special to be there, that's probably my biggest pet peeve is no restaurant should treat you like that. Because anytime you go into a restaurant, you know, the fact that you are spending your money to be there, there should be a mutual respect between consumer and service. So, oh, and no to consumers, so that doesn't give you a right to be rude because I can't stand that either. So anyways, basically I started writing more the story, the experience of dining out, because I do feel like perhaps because I'm a screenwriter and an observer at heart, there are so many things that you could just take in your environment, the sounds, the textures, if there's loud music, if there's people talking next to you. I mean, really, if you just sit back sometimes and observe everything that's going on around you, going out is a pretty fun experience. And when it's not a fun experience, it's still something to talk about. So I take the approach that living should be an adventure every day that you do it. Because really, as far as I know, at least this is kind of all I get. Every day is a new day, and every day should be something that you tackle with complete abandon. And it's not easy because everybody has stresses and we all have bills to pay and families to take care of and people to love or people to be mad at or whatever it is. I just think that the process of life is supposed to be one that we enjoy and experience. And granted, I am fortunate that I am not living in a place where I have to deal with some of the downfalls of, you know, war or violence or outbursts of things that would make me have to live in fear or dodge a bullet. So honestly, you know, not to be a downer, but we're also very fortunate, those of us who can sit here and listen to a podcast, to just take our breath and, you know, really the fact that we're alive and we don't have to live every day surviving. You know, I think that's a pretty fortunate blessing that we have. And I don't use that word lightly because I don't mean that at all in a religious sense. I just mean it in that it's sort of that unspoken gift that we can wake up and try something new every day. So those of you who are listening who maybe don't have that opportunity, don't worry. I'm going to make sure that whatever we do in this world, that we make sure everybody has that opportunity, because no one should have to live like that. So anyways, aside from that, back to food. I would have to say that the very first experience I ever had eating, I mean, I remember being a kid and going out to eat. It was such a treat. We did not have money to do it. So when we got to do it, it was extraordinary. And I do remember the first fancy dinner, which it probably in my world now wouldn't be so fancy. But as a kid, it was so great. We went to this restaurant called the Sea Lion in Malibu. It was off of the PCH, and there was actually a Doughboy pool with a sea lion, which is pretty awesome. And we would go in there, and they had lobsters in the tank, and that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And I just remember sitting there watching them, having no clue that when people were pulling the lobsters out of the tank, that they were going to be boiling them to eat. So I think there began my love of saving all living things, but sadly, I do love me a good lobster. So, but I do remember that experience, and I will never forget how special I felt that I got to have, you know, free bread. I had no idea what the concept of free bread was. I thought, oh my gosh, they're like, my grandma must be loaded because we're going to have to pay for the bread too. And then, you know, realizing that it was free, and it was such a simple and very innocent experience, but kind of started my appreciation for food. And, you know, I have two grandmothers that used to really like to cook, and we'd have family meals on Sundays. And my one grandmother was Hispanic. She's Mexican and Spanish. And so she would make these, you know, enchiladas or whatever, nothing at all fancy, but just watching her was fascinating to me. Chop the onions, pour the sauce, put the cheese on top of the enchiladas, hand rolling everything. You know, it was quite the experience. And as a kid, it was fascinating to me. And then the other thing that she used to make was her French toast. And oh, I was, to this day, it's like I'm just trying to perfect my French toast. She would take, which I know now is not completely abnormal, but to me it was fascinating. She would take bread, and it was always white bread, like Wonder Bread, which, you know, gross, right? But still good. She'd take white Wonder Bread, and she would separate the eggs and the yolk from the egg whites, and she would whip the egg whites until they peaked. And they were the most airy, wonderful things. And she would whip the yolk in a separate bowl, and she would dip the bread in the yolk, and then she would double dip it in the egg white, and it would be the perfect crispy French toast. And I think she put a little sugar on there and a little vanilla in it. And that was the best food I ever remember eating. And then my other grandmother was a little bit more of a traditionalist in terms of cooking. But, you know, we would have casseroles and things like that. But it was just the process of, we sat down at the table, you know, we wouldn't, no elbows on the table. It was, you know, very proper, a lot of manners, but not the stuffy manners, just, you know, sitting at a family table. And we, all the kids would take turns doing the dishes and drying the dishes after a meal. And I just remember how much of an impact that had on me. And of course, I didn't realize it at the time, but now it all makes perfect sense. So, yeah, it's just fascinating and interesting. And I don't mean to keep using that word fascinating. I guess I'm going to have to work on finding another adjective. But it was a really memorable experience to watch, you know, the history behind these women creating these meals for the family and the work that went into it. You know, knowing what I know both my grandparents have gone through in their life. But that sort of started my appreciation for things. And I didn't cook ever. I never really cooked until I left my parents' house when I was 18 or almost 19. It was right after I graduated from high school. A few months later, I packed my things and left and never went back. So when I went on my own, I just had this natural curiosity. And of course, going to the grocery store is something that I found a profound experience. And I remember I lived in Burbank at the time. That was my very first apartment. And I lived right across from the Walt Disney Studios because I was going to work in film, which I did. For those of you who don't know, I started out as a makeup and special effects artist in film and TV. I was 19 when I started. And anyways, I would go to this local mart, and I want to say it wasn't Henry's. It was, might be Harry's, but it was this tiny little market. And it was always hand-picked, fresh from the farm produce. And I loved going to see what they had. And I would just pick random things I'd never seen before and figure out how to cook them, taste things, explore all the different, you know, I never really had a white radish or made kale or even used, green leaf lettuce, because everybody in my family used iceberg. And I just thought the colors were so rich and beautiful. And then the red leaf lettuce and cooking with that. And then I would take chicken. And at the time, for whatever reason, I was very influenced by Italian spices. I loved cooking with parsley and oreganos and sage and thyme and really rosemary, of course, was one of my favorites. But basil became and still is my absolute favorite herb. But I just remember going through and I would cook these, you know, buy chicken because I liked chicken thighs and chicken breasts at the time. And I would keep the skin on and I would smother it in olive oil in different, you know, I'd take every spice until I could figure out the best way to do it. And I loved fresh ground salt because I always had salt, you know, Morton salt was really all we ever used. So to see that there was sea salt and rock salt and Himalayan salt and lava salt, I had no idea what any of that stuff was. So I just played and played and played and played. And I loved to make it look pretty. I was very into presentation. So I was no chef, and I am no chef. I just like to cook. But sort of my appreciation for food started there. And I remember I would go to really any place and eat. And then as the years progressed and I worked in film, you know, we would have a lot of production meetings and different things. And we started going to better restaurants. And I started being exposed to nicer restaurants and more high-end cuisine. And then I started working in advertising. And then, of course, that's when I decided to focus more on writing and less on makeup. And I'll touch on that another time. But just that whole process of having meetings through advertising, you know, we had to have client meetings. And so I became literally obsessed with finding the best restaurants with the best food. And for some odd reason, I had a rather, a refined palate that I just don't know where it came from, but I did. And I always loved amazing food with taste. And I thought that food should be pretty because if you're going to spend that kind of money, it should look good. So anyways, thus began my process. And so I think as a natural consequence, I would inevitably write about it. And granted, it started as a dare, but it turned into a pretty great dare. So here I am. And now I get to eat some of the best food in the world, some of the simplest food, some of the most exquisite food, some of the most elaborate food. And it doesn't really matter how it's plated or where it comes from. Could be $5, could be, you know, several hundred bucks. Doesn't really matter. But the process of dining has become one that I thoroughly enjoy. And so that's kind of it, I guess. Now you have a little bit of background about that and how I see food and why I love food. But I do think that it's sort of this wonderful art that is not a lost art, which in this world is a welcome venture. So I guess that's it. I think maybe this is how I'll start. Keep it simple. Talk about food. And that's the first portion of this episode. So welcome to podcast number one. It might be really bad and I will get better. But yeah, that's it. So thanks for listening and thank you so much for supporting A Taste of Dawn. And for those of you who have not gone to the website yet, it is A Todd Magazine. So that's A like Apple, T like Tom, O like Ostrich, D like David, magazine.com. That's A-T-O-D, magazine.com. You can also find me on Facebook, which I lovingly refer to as Crackbook, at facebook.com/ A Taste of Dawn, capital A-T-O-D. And you can also find me on Twitter at A Taste of Dawn. So find me, talk to me, interact with me, and you're welcome to email me any suggestions that you have. If you want to just find me on, go to any one of those portals, there is a way to reach me. Please find me and give me some suggestions of things you want to talk about. And eventually I'm going to have callers. I'm just going to have to figure out how to do that. And we'll go from there. All right, you guys have a really, really great rest of your night. And I will talk to you soon. Okay, bye.